everything is better in twos. Two puppies, the two-step, double dutch, both eyebrows. Or even better, two lines of unlimited data for only $80 a month with the Cricket Unlimited 2 plan. That deserves two very big thumbs up. Cricket Wireless. Something to smile about.
$55 per month for line limited 2 plan credit required on 2 lines. $80 per month after $30 credit on second line. Data speed max of 3 megabits per second. Video streaming max 1.5 megabits per second after 22 gigabytes. Data usage credit makes low speed pricing subject to change at any time.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is syndicated columnist Amy Alcon with Advice Goddess Radio. Nerd your way to a better life with the best brains in therapy and research. Now, I'm going to open tonight's show with the title of a blog item I posted the other day. Male pantywad angst-ridden over his erotic thoughts about random women. So, on Slate.com, the stay-at-home dad named Andy Hines wrote a piece that was far too earnest to be satire. He literally was angst-ridden that he had lusty thoughts when passing hot women on the street, went through all sorts of guilt, and then wrangling to try to stop this. So my first thought was, does the guy know nothing of evolutionary psychology? If men didn't look at women and want to have sex with them, the planet would be populated with plants and cockroaches. My second thought was, as one of my blog commenters put it, just gouge out your eyes and be done with it. And then, when I realized this is yet another example of men buying into the notion that they're supposed to be ashamed at being male, and then I got very depressed. So we're going to get undepressed tonight because my guest is forensic psychologist Dr. Helen Smith, and she is here to talk about what's become of men. Her book is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. And best of all, she not only lays out the problem, she offers hope for men and women who care about equal rights in the form of solutions. So hello, Helen.
Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for having me on the show tonight.
And you write in the book, I goaded you for about a year to write this book, so I'm very glad you did because you really lay out what people, I think, don't realize, that men actually have become, to a great extent, this sort of underclass in the way we treat them, think about them, but we don't realize it.
Yeah, I think it's so alien to everyone. We always think about women's feelings and rights first because for so long people have felt that women have had a raw deal, and indeed in the past there have been some areas where women, yes, of course, there's been a lot of discrimination. But now the tables have turned, and I think that we have gone so far over to the other side of thinking that women's rights are the only ones that matter that we've started to really overlook boys and men and their issues. And I think it's gotten to the point where we're actually penalizing men for being male.
And actually, you write about the sort of person who thinks that men should suffer for the ills of their ancestors and for discrimination against women in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, this idea that okay, we should punish you because, you know, we couldn't vote.
Right. I mean, I always am amazed by women who talk about how empathetic women are. We, you know, women are always taught that they're the empathetic sex, but actually when it comes to feeling, one of the reasons I wrote the book is that I think that it's mainly for men, but one of the things I think is that women don't really empathize with men or people, and other men don't empathize with men. It's sort of like, you know, men are the only group that we seem to feel free, or one of the few groups that we're free to discriminate against very, very openly in our society and without reserve. And it's very, it's actually looked upon as sort of funny, or nobody really cares if you say something negative against a man because that's just very thought of as just something acceptable in our society.
We think men should just suck it up.
Yeah, we do. I mean, men are just supposed to put up with whatever they have to, and women aren't supposed to put up with anything. And the thing is, a lot of men feel this way, and men have always been told to be masculine or to, you know, don't whine, don't make trouble for yourself or for anyone else, and just kind of go along with the program. That's kind of how we treated women, you know, in the 30s and 40s, 50s. And now we're turning around, we're treating men the same way. We're saying, be silent, don't speak up for your rights. And I think in terms of evolution, I think men for so long have always been taught or have always tried to protect women, and it's very, very hard for men to speak up and to speak out against what has happened to them in society, because they very much desire to protect women, and I think they see themselves speaking up as not doing that, not being manly.
Right, you write about this, and we'll get into that. But I wanted to ask you, you know, something about you say that all around us, we hear the question, where have all the good men gone? But you say this is the wrong question, and that the right question is, why have all the good men gone on strike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think men really have gone on strike, and that's sort of what the book is about. What's happening is men aren't getting married as often anymore, going to college, and a lot of books like look at this phenomenon. Like, there's been books like The End of Men or Manning Up by Kay Heimowitz or Save the Males by Kathleen Parker. And the basic message of these books is that the men are acting immature. And my point in the book is that actually men are acting rationally, and that the rewards for men in the fields of marriage, education, career, and fatherhood are a lot less than they used to be, and the costs and dangers are higher, so they're opting out. And I kind of call this in the book sort of going galt. It's sort of like Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged. It's sort of like they're sort of going on strike in the sense that they've just maybe decided or not decided, just sort of are opting out and not doing the things that society thought they were supposed to do because it's not working for them.
Yeah, you talk about it, dropping out of college, men dropping out of the workforce, marriage, fatherhood, as bailing out of unfairness, that men have started to see, hey, you know, we're not going to be the punching bags anymore. There's not a whole lot happening for us in some of these areas except unfairness, so we're just going to not participate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think men feel that it's not only not participate, it's almost like it's a rigged game, and if men do participate, it's sort of like, what's the point? To be single now, I think for men, is a much better deal. And the legal, I mean, one thing that could really concerns me is the legal aspects of what men are going through in marriage or education. For example, right now in education, a young man can go to college, and the next thing he knows, a woman can charge him with a sexual assault or a sexual crime, and he really doesn't have a whole lot of legal standing with the new evidence rules. All they have to have is a preponderance of evidence. In other words, if the administration at the college feels that there's a 50% chance this man did this, then he can be found guilty of something he may not have done. And so there are many legal aspects that men are dealing with that women would never stand for it with women.
And the crazy thing is that our government has put these policies in. So the policy you're talking about, the Obama administration sent out this letter interpreting mm-hmm. Title IX in a way that, as you note, removes men's due process. So all the rules of evidence and innocent till proven guilty, there are these kangaroo courts on college campuses that just basically, if you're male, you're pretty much guilty. You know, it's very hard to prove yourself innocent in these cases.
Yeah, it really is, and the Department of Education has required these colleges to adopt rules that punish men based on this very lax preponderance of evidence standards rather than the criminal laws beyond a reasonable doubt. And I actually saw, I didn't read the post by Eugene Volokh, but I actually saw something by Casey Johnson, which was over at Minding the Campus, and he's a professor, I think, at City University. But he was talking about, Eugene Volokh was saying, well, it's not that bad, or it's sort of okay to have this preponderance of evidence, that it sort of goes along. He was looking at it kind of as a civil libertarian, I think. I mean, I'm sort of interpreting what I think he was saying, but I think he was just seeing it as, well, it's not that bad because it's sort of like a business. If they think you've done something wrong, they can dismiss you. But it's more than that. We're having the government, the civil rights, the Office of Civil Rights has sent letters to those colleges who get federal funds, and they've told them that they want them to use this lower preponderance of evidence where you only need 50% plus a feather, they call it, chance of somebody being guilty of, and you're talking about accusing somebody of, possibly something as criminal as rape. And the thing is, when men's lives are ruined, nobody cares. Like if a boy or a young man is in college and he gets charged with a sexual crime and is thrown out of his college, he may not be able to get into another school, or his career could be shot. And people don't realize, or they don't care, that a man is going through this. That's always okay. Maybe if it was a woman, they might care a little bit more. But we're so ready to just point the finger in our society at men without even a fair amount of evidence. And I think that's kind of like what is happening in our society. As long as someone's male, it's sort of okay to do whatever you want to them. One of the things I point out a lot of instances in the book, for example, child support, where fathers and families, they've actually changed their name, I think, to what, Shared Parenting Organization or something, but they did a study and they found that in Massachusetts it was something like 96 or 98% of all people going to jail for child support were men, and men were 8 times more likely than a woman who owed child support to be placed in jail because of it. And
yeah,
I find this very extreme.
I'm all for people paying for their children when they have them, but we'll get into the examples of where people who aren't even related to these kids are made to pay, even though they show that they aren't. But I wanted to bring up this example. You give this example in your book that's so chilling about the campuses where this guy was accused of rape, and the police showed that it was a false accusation. It was, this woman was charged for making a false accusation in regular court, and the campus refused to remove the black mark against him. It's so terrible. You don't believe this stuff goes on. If I didn't write about this so often, blog about this so often, I wouldn't believe it because it sounds too crazy.
You know, it does sound crazy, and I'm so thankful there were places like FIRE out there, the Freedom of
The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. You quote Robert Shibley in your book from FIRE, and they defend free speech violations on campus pro bono. They're great. Give them money. They're fantastic.
Yes, exactly. But if it wasn't for them in that particular case, they helped this young man to get the college at least to back down, but they never did issue an apology or anything, and it's just pathetic that, colleges can get away with this. And honestly, I think one reason they get away with it is it's a male, and I think people just feel like, I've had men in the years over my practice where they will get charged with something, or they will have, a domestic abuse charge or something, and they will end up in jail, and even if they tell me they didn't do it, or they just say, well, I didn't even bother to fight back, and they'll just spend time in jail because it's almost like a learned helplessness. They feel like there's nothing that can be done, and I think that's how a lot of men feel. It's sort of like, well, there's nothing that can be done. We'll just back off. Or some of them just opt out and say, well, I'll just stay away from anything that will bring me trouble, which might be women or it might be situations. And it's just, it's very bad for our society that men feel this way, because it means that we as Americans are not going to be interacting together in ways that would benefit society as much as we could.
Yes, I think that's a very important point, that your book, Men on Strike, is also, it's about the impact of women. And I am talking with Dr. Helen Smith, forensic psychologist, and her book, To Tell You the Whole Title, is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. So people are probably wondering, what is a woman doing writing a book like this? So tell us about actually the turn your career took. You had a client who is a wheelchair-bound man who was being beaten by his large and angry wife.
Right. Yeah. Over 20 years ago, I used to work in New York, and that was one of my first encounters with a man who had a large wife who was beating him, and there was no available facilities, or there was no contact. Like if it was a woman, you could bet that there are shelters and there are all kinds of help available. But even today, it's very difficult. I mean, there are hardly places in the country that take men or that really consider what they are going through in domestic violence relations. And I know you had mentioned on your blog a new study that is that definitely lent support to the fact that women are do about 50% of domestic violence, and we just consider it to be a man, you know, male on female problem, but we don't look at the reverse. And then the other side of it is that we think, well, even if a woman hits a man, ha-ha, it's sort of funny, and the man doesn't really get hurt. But often that's not the case, and men do sustain injuries like my patient. And it's really a bad situation because people don't really care. But as to why a woman would write this book, you know, back, in, I guess, was it in the 70s when Phil Donahue was around, he was always advocating for women's rights, and nobody seemed to think that was weird. So I'm kind of wondering, why would people think it was weird to be a men's rights activist if you were a woman?
Well, I ask that because the men's rights movement is actually pretty small compared to all the women. I would say that probably maybe most women consider themselves feminists, call themselves feminists. And
I actually don't think that's true, Amy. I actually saw some statistic on it once, and it was pretty low. The women who are willing to call themselves feminists at this point, I think it's somewhere around 20 or 30%. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I think I've seen that statistic thrown out there. So I don't think the majority of women in the United States call themselves a feminist. I think that they, you know, I think 20 or 30 very vocal percent do, and those are the ones that get all the attention because they're more in the media, and probably probably where you get that is the media is so focused on everybody being a feminist, everything about women, that we think that every woman's a feminist, when in reality they're not. I actually myself, I mean, when people say, do you call yourself a feminist, not in today's world. I mean, I used to call myself a feminist because I mistakenly thought that feminists were people who believed in equality, and if that's what feminist means, I'll take it. But it doesn't anymore. It really means female privilege, and I'm just totally think that that's a very negative thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I talk in my blog a number of times about that I don't call myself a feminist because I'm for equal rights for all, not special treatment for some under the guise of equal treatment, which is what I see feminism too often doing now. And you talk about this in your book about thinking similarly, and I love the Martin Luther King Jr. quote you put in, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And I think that that's a really important way that women need to see that you don't just get to advocate for your kind, that unfairness for anyone is something to fight against if you truly want to call yourself somebody who believes in equality.
And I think it's especially important to understand that, you know, if you the most vulnerable people really should be the ones who also really believe in equal rights, because if you yourself have been oppressed, it seems like you would understand that you wouldn't want to be the oppressor. I mean, that's what women are turning into. They're turning into the very men that they talked about who they supposedly despised and thought were so horrible. Now they're those men, and I think that's just as bad. I write in the book about coverture, and what that means is that in the old days, when women were married, the man held the sort of legal aspects in the marriage in his hands. And now, in today's world, coverture is held by the woman, and she has all the cards in marriage and in reproduction, and men have very few rights. A lot of times when I talk to people, if women, you know, may get upset or other men, they might say, well, that's not true. But then you ask them to name a couple of reproductive rights that men have. Or sometimes what I'll do is if I meet somebody and they're talking about what the wonders of marriage for men, then I'll say, well, you name me, you know, five reasons that men should get married other than, you know, this is a great woman and that, you know, a legal reason. Because marriage is a legal contract, and shouldn't a legal contract be a fair and equitable situation? Why would you want to enter into a contract that isn't fair to you?
Yeah, and let's talk about marriage. You say in your book, Men on Strike, that Western culture has spent the past 50 years making marriage a better deal for women, while for men it's become a real ball and chain, sometimes almost literally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for some men, I think women are told so much that they're empowered, and that in most relationships, society is going to agree with the woman, whether that be that she can run her husband down in a car and almost get away with it, or if he cheats on her, he's just a horrible person that deserves, like Tiger Woods, to be beaten with a golf club. But if you're a woman who cheats or does anything, it's because the man was no good. He was, you know, he was probably doing something to you or making the woman feel less than adequate, or it was an emotional problem. And we always give women, there's always a reason that women have to do something that's legitimate, whereas if men do something in a marriage, they're just held to a much higher standard. And men are expected now, there's all these articles and constant bombardment from the media that men are supposed to be coming home and doing housework, watching the children, and everything that men do is not counted. For example, if they are home, you know, mowing the lawn or doing, you know, changing light bulbs or doing things that might be more, you know, that maybe more men might do, that's discounted. It's only if they do the dishes or do something that was stereotypical for women that that's seen as any type of help around the house. So a man is still supposed to earn a living. He's supposed to help around the house, take care of the children, and then he's belittled and told that's not enough by the culture. And so what, you know, what is enough?
And so you say that men no longer see marriage as important as they did even 15 years ago. I mean, it does sound like kind of a raw deal to a great extent. So tell us some of the other reasons men are not marrying.
Well, of course, there's the legal aspect. There's just the simple fact that I think a lot of men are afraid of divorce, and they fear that if they do get divorced, we know that the legal atmosphere is not on their side. In most cases, for example, I think it's something like 84% of custody goes to the mother. Men, if there is alimony paid, which, you know, alimony laws now are not as bad as they used to be, but in general, there's only something like 2 to 3% of women paying alimony. So, you know, that leaves it, 95, 96, 97% of men paying the alimony. I think there's the legal aspect. And I think then there's also the feeling that they don't get as much respect. Like, people make fun of married men a lot more. And, that comes a lot from the media, where the media is always talking about the stupid, you know, dads or bumbling idiots. And so I think men have, they feel maybe there's a sense that you'll have a loss of respect. It used to be that you needed to be married to be grown up, and now if a man's married, sometimes, you know, a lot of people either sort of feel sorry for him, or it's sort of like his life is, it's much more regimented. Men don't even see their friends as often. Just in a social aspect, they found that men are less likely to see their friends when they're married. And for men, it's actually worse than for women, because when men don't see their friends, it actually very much affects their self-esteem. But because men don't really speak up or say anything, and nobody would care if they did, they just keep their mouths shut and become more and more isolated, to the point where I have a chapter in the book called, Why Is Dad in the Basement? And I think it ends up with Dad just sort of being isolated and just heading down there just to get some peace and quiet.
Yeah, I think that's great. I want to have you talk about that, too, about the man cave. But I wanted to quote you this great quote about the insulting views of men and dad. Hannah Rosen wrote this book called The End of Men and the Rise of Women, and you come back with this great quote about her young son, to whom the book is dedicated, and you write, "Yes, Jacob, mommy is a bully, and maybe when you grow up, you will lead a revolution that teaches bullies like your mom that men are not defective girls." You can't blame anybody for not wanting to be a dad, or, you know, to sort of take the male role when that's how they're being portrayed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, and there are a lot, actually this is going on a lot in Britain. There's been a big fall in the birth rate in Britain, and one of the reasons they say is because men don't want to get married, and of course all these articles poke fun at men and say these men are commitment phobic, and they're just selfish and no good. And the thing is that, you know, men have learned from their fathers or their uncles or an older brother, somebody, you know, has gone through hell, a really bad situation in a marriage, and they've learned it's not really the best bet for a dad, because the kids basically belong to mom in today's world. They're not treated particularly with respect. They don't have, you know, the house is usually for mom. If dad gets anything, it's the area, and some men, I think some men do like, maybe they do like the basement, but maybe they'd want to come up for air once in a while. But basically, the run of the house is given to kids, and the mom and dad is sort of relegated to the garage or the basement. As far as Hannah Rosen's book, The End of Men, I just couldn't believe that when she said that, when her son, who was 6 years old, said that only bullies write books called The End of Men, the correct answer would have been, that is a really how do you feel, or what, you know, that is terrible, or to think, like, why would I have written something like that? But instead, this woman just, you know, thinks, well, he's just learning about bullying in school. It's not that big of a deal. But just her interaction with him and how little concern this woman has for her own son goes to show you how little respect women have for the opposite sex. They have no empathy, and it's really pathetic. And if you have no empathy for other people, you can't expect them to really want to be that involved with you.
And actually, you as a psychologist and as a person have a different view on men, the notion that they are poor communicators or unfeeling. You don't feel that way at all.
I don't feel that way, and I mean, this is anecdotal, but in my practice over the past over 20 years, I've never had a man that won't talk to me. Most men that come in the office, people tell me, like, oh, this guy doesn't talk. They'll even talk for them, whether it's a young man or an older guy. You know, people say, well, this guy doesn't talk or whatever, but most men will talk. It's just most people don't listen, and with men, you just sort of have to be open and receptive, and I think that's one of the things women and our society doesn't really understand. It's not that men are poor communicators. It's they have a different style of talking, whether that be action-oriented. You know, a lot of times therapists, especially with young men, will, you know, you'll be a little more action-oriented. You might want to, I've even seen therapists who will go out and maybe play basketball or walk with a boy, to just do something a little more active to get them talking. And I think it's just a little bit different style. But men will actually sit and talk. It's just that you have to be open to what they have to say and not sit in horrible judgment, deciding that what they have to say is nothing you want to hear.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And I tell women who write to me in my advice column that men show love. Don't expect a guy to talk to you necessarily like they talk on Oprah, because that's not always how men are going to communicate. But they are going to tell you they love you. Just it might be by washing your car.
Right. Or just doing something for you. Exactly. It may not be, you know, they may not communicate it in the way that you want, but they just have a different way of communicating. And just because it's not your way doesn't mean that it's the wrong way.
Yes, absolutely. This is Amy Alcon's Advice Goddess Radio. My guest tonight is forensic psychologist Dr. Helen Smith, and her terrific book is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. And now, you interviewed a lot of people for your book. One of them was Vox Day, who's a game designer and author who runs the blog Alpha Game. And he talked about the allure of other things other than this sort of servitude, indentured servitude of marriage in many cases. He says, the problem is that games and porn are entertaining, inexpensive, easily accessible, and reliable. Women can be entertaining, but they are expensive, inaccessible for most men, and from the male perspective, shockingly unreliable. Now, is this something that's changed other than porn and games being available?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I don't necessarily think that porn or video games are bad. I think that they're positive things for men, and I think that I think James Toronto in the Wall Street Journal said this best when he said that they're the very essence of that men are attracted to video games is they're the epitome of masculine virtue, challenge, mastery, and control. And in a way, men feel some men feel they don't have control, and those. You know, video games are a good way to have that in our society, because in a world that tells men that what they are isn't good, isn't right, competition and challenge and competitiveness and aggression are all seen as such negative aspects, and those are aspects of the masculine. And we tell men and boys that those are bad things. But when you play video games, you can do those things. You can act those things out. You can be in that world. And I think that that's very intriguing to a lot of young men and older men. But I also think, I think that in the old days, there just wasn't any option. Think about it. If you didn't get married, you couldn't even really have sex with a woman. I mean, you basically, it was pretty much off limits unless you got married. And today, you can, you know, men do have other options. But I don't think that's the only thing. I think they've turned away from women because the options aren't as good. I think as women have gotten, and also I think as women have gotten more and more educated, they demand that men who aren't being educated as often have higher and higher levels of education. And, you know, I think that the men feel that it would take so much to compete for what women want that a lot of men just feel it's just not worth it and they opt out. There's always that 80-20% rule people talk about where you know, 20% of men are having sex with 80% of women or vice versa. But I think that I think that leaves a lot of guys out, you know, out without desirable women, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and this is what you're talking about is hypergamy, which is when, you know, women evolve to want to marry up, to be with men more successful than they are. And you write about, you know, that men are dropping out of school, not even going to school. So if the guy is becoming, you know, some kind of laborer and the woman has a PhD, the notion that she just be with him because he's a good person, that's not really going to happen in most cases.
Well, and you know, maybe we'll see that change. I don't really, I doubt it because, you know, just from, you know, just from evolution and that type of thing, women do want to marry up, and but they expect men to have more and more. In the old days, if you were just could provide for a woman, then, you know, you could, that would be something, and you were respected for that. Nowadays, the, you know, a lot of times with men, the government steps in, and the government's every woman's daddy now. I mean, apparently women want the government to play dad, to pay for the kids, to pay for everything, and they really don't need, especially this harms mostly the lower class and the lower socioeconomic men, and more of those men are not getting married. And I think it's something like 18% of men 40 to 44 are not now married who are lower socioeconomic background, and one of the reasons for that is I think that women are getting the good, you know, goodies and using the government or having the government be their substitute daddy, and they don't really need or want a man, and so they have, it's just easier to have kids and have the government help you with those children, and you don't need men as much. So on one hand, men are dropping out, but on the other hand, part of it is that because the government steps in and acts as the dad, they don't feel as needed.
Well, as I wrote, you know, it's like the death of shame. There's some reality show. It's called, you see what it's called? It's called Pregnant and Dating. And I blogged about this today. I said, shame is officially dead, cremated, in an urn in somebody's basement. With the idea, oh, I'm an unwed mother, no problem. You know, because it's really bad for kids to not have an intact family. And so this is really bad. This government is daddy thing that's going on. You know, that sort of is the other side of men dropping out. It's okay because there's somebody else, the other taxpayers, the big G of government that's going to take over. But this is not good for women, not good for men, and certainly not good for kids.
No, I don't think it's good for kids. I don't know if it's good for women or not. I suppose they feel like they've got somebody paying for them. Maybe it is good for them. They can have, think about it, women can have children, have the government pay for it while they don't need some, you know, even need to deal with a man. So I'm not convinced. Is it bad for women? I don't know. Is it bad for men? Absolutely. And those are the people I'm concerned more about, the men in my book, because, you know, we always look at the other side, what's best for women, but my book looks at, you know, what is good for men. And one of the things that's really changed, you know, you mentioned this show, Pregnant and Dating. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with having kids if you're not married. I think that's, you know, to me as a libertarian, that's, you know, your own right. Now, I don't really think the government and other taxpayers need to be paying for your children. I think that's the part that's a problem. But half of all women under 30 now have their children, who have children, are not married. So that means that that's going to be a very fast-growing demographic. And how is that going to play itself out? And also, how is it going to play itself out without having a dad around, you know, without that many male role models? And as I write in the book, there are many boys who go through their day never seeing a man. They may go from morning till night. You know, they get up, they got a single mom. Mom drops them off at school. They just have teachers there all day who are women. Men don't want to go out and coach Little League because, God forbid, they might be charged with child abuse. So they're home. You know, they don't want to deal with it. So it's just a really hard situation, and a boy may not just not be around any male role models. And I do think that male role models are important, and I think they're important to girls too.
Absolutely. I see that in my own life with my own dad. And I think that, you know, when I was talking about bad for women, I think that if you look at, I can't speak the individual woman, but when you to successfully raise children, I think that there has been a lot of research that shows that the intact family seems to be the best way to do that. Now, maybe you have like grandma and mom, but just to have one parent seems to be a tough way to instill values in the kid because there's no backup.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that that's the key there is if you've got, you know, several people who are involved, like mom, right, and grandma, or, you know, two partners, two females, I think that's fine too. But I think that the kid needs to feel that there's some family group that's there to take care of them. And I still do think that the male influence is important, and I think it's particularly important for boys. I think that, you know, I've seen so many kids who don't have a dad, and those kids, you know, most of them I see in a juvenile facility, but, you know, that's probably a because of my work. But,
right.
You know, a lot of the research does show that more boys are definitely more prone to getting into trouble with the law. They're more prone, you know, not to further education. I think fathers, and I think one of the things fathers do is they really teach boys and the boundaries of aggression. You know, how do you learn how to sort of playfully fight? You know, dads used to do that, and even dads now, because of the political correctness of our society, are really unlikely or less likely today to show boys, say, to help them understand the boundaries of aggression, because most dads aren't aggressive. For example, you see these ridiculous commercials like the Volkswagen one where dad's throwing a ball and they show him and dad can't even throw the ball properly and the boy's looking at him like, oh my gosh. And it's just like commercials and just the media portray dads as just a bunch of passive weenies and who can't really do anything. So what do kids learn about parents, about dads? They learn that dad is an incompetent kind of boob that you make fun of, and mom is sort of more together. And I think that's just a bad lesson to be learning.
Yeah, it is. It is the predominant image in commercials. This is Amy Alcon's Advice Goddess Radio. I'm talking with forensic psychologist Dr. Helen Smith, and her book is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. And I want to talk about the fatherhood we see more and more of these days, fatherhood without consent, when there's paternity fraud and these other shocking examples. First, tell us what paternity fraud is and what happens.
Well, paternity fraud is just simply where somebody says that you are the father of a child and you're not. And the thing is that people think, oh, well, if I find out, many young men, what I found fascinating was the young men I talked to for my book had no idea that if a girl said that he was the father of her child and he was found out not to be later on, he had no idea that he might still be forced to pay child support, that the laws are such that even if a father, for example, or a husband finds out that his wife was cheating on him and a child is not his, and he finds out, you know, say the child's 3 or 4 years old, he is still forced to pay child support for a child that's not even his. And worse than that, some people are forced against their, you know, into fatherhood against their will. There's one case that Professor Michael Higdon is a lawyer, a law professor at the University of Tennessee, and he wrote a really terrific paper, but one of the cases was that there was a 15-year-old boy who had sex with a 34-year-old woman, and the court said that when she got pregnant, this boy, who she basically, it was statutory rape, he was told or forced to pay child support to this woman. And I just imagine if the genders were reversed, there's no way we would allow ever a woman to have to do that.
It's amazing. I love your quote on that. You say, can you imagine the uproar if a 15-year-old girl had sex with a 34-year-old man and she was obligated to him in any way by the courts? And that's exactly, I mean, that so well illustrates the difference between the way we view and treat men and view and treat women. And it's just so astonishing that the stuff about paternity fraud that you write about in Men on Strike and that you and I both blog about, you wouldn't believe this unless you read that it was the Associated Press writing about this stuff and all these other big news organizations. You'd think somebody just made it up, because this is the stuff of some horrible Jean Valjean, Les Miserables movie with some horribly unfair thing going on. And it's unbelievable, and it happens so often that the state, they just care about getting the money. They don't care. Oh, your DNA test said that you're not the dad. Okay, well, you responded too late. I mean, in what kind of America do we imagine this happening? And it actually does happen all the time.
It does happen all the time. And even things like, as far as reproductive rights, it's sort of like, women have rights and men have responsibilities, or if men basically don't have any rights. For example, if a woman wants to give up a child for adoption, basically in a lot of states, I mean, you can sign up for what's called a punitive father registry, but you have to go state to state and do it. So if a woman moves to another state and he doesn't know that she's giving the child up, she can give it up there. There's actually a website called, I think it's babysellers.com, where a guy just wrote about what happened in a case like this, where his girlfriend just gave his baby up for adoption. And the thing is that it's up to the dad to sort of track this woman down state by state by actually almost stalking her. And it's just such a terrible thing that men have no control over their own children. And I just think it's very ironic that, you know, women are always sticking these bumper stickers on that say, my body, my choice. But, you know, it's like men don't have any choice. I don't know. I mean, other than, you know, using a condom or getting a vasectomy, what other way is there? Men really don't have a whole lot of ability to control their reproduction. And what amazes me is that people in response to that just say, well, the man needs to keep his legs together. And I'm like, what kind of world? You know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of world? Who would say that? And a lot of times it's other men. And I'm like, why? What kind of man? And you know, it's something we were talking about earlier. It's almost like these men, I call them, you know, Uncle Tim's. It's like they're these male sellouts where they're selling out their own gender, and they actually like the idea of sort of going along with whatever women tell them to do because maybe they think they'll get laid more often, or maybe they think that, you know, it's a big, if you're very politically correct like that, I think there's a lot of accolades for you, and there's, you get a lot of privileges through that. So by, it's just really pathetic how willing some men are to really, like, put a yoke around or make other men into sort of slaves.
Absolutely. And Hugo Schweitzer is a professor who comes to mind as an Uncle Tim. And I think you're absolutely right. They think that they'll get laid. They'll get more chicks if they're this sort of apologist for being male. And this leads to this horrible atmosphere on campus that you write about. And a friend of yours and mine, Dr. Barbara Oakley, who is the author of Cold-Blooded Kindness and the editor of Pathological Altruism, this incredible thinker, she talks about this on college campuses. She's an engineering professor, and she says, so I'll read you what she wrote me, even in small groups, it's so taken for granted that men are to be demean that it's almost like breathing. It's not like saying something demeaning about someone who's a different race. People have been trained to be hypersensitive to that. What I mean is that what I want to object, even in the nicest kind of possible way, she means discrimination against men, it's like I'm trying to overturn the worldview of someone who thinks in a completely alien fashion, and it's like trying to tell Mahmoud Ahmadinejad that he should marry a Jew or something. I love that. And so that's the atmosphere. You write about this, too, on campus, quoting Christina Hoff Summers, about what a hostile environment school in general is and colleges for boys and men.
Yeah, I mean, right, she talks a lot, and she of course, wrote the War on Boys, and I think she has actually got a new edition of that coming out in August, so I look forward to reading that. But she's great on handling just what is going on with men in colleges today, and it's not only colleges, but it really begins in elementary school where boys just are not taught the kinds of things they need to know. For example, there are many boys in this country, a lot of minority and poor boys, who don't know how to read, who literally are almost illiterate. And we don't push the resources towards helping those boys because there are so many large lobbies and organizations for girls, such as the American Association for University Women, or, you know, now in all these places that get in an uproar if any help is given to boys. And so we focus mainly only on what's going on with girls. And actually, obviously, girls are doing fine in school. They make better grades. They go on to college more often. People are always hyped up about this so-called 72 cents on the dollar, but women are even able to get out and make so many more choices about their lives, such as, you know, having a more balance in their life where they, you know, a lot of times what they found, rather than making 72 cents, they found that most of this discrepancy has to do with the occupation of the person, the education, and the number of hours worked. I recently saw something that said that there were only something like 3 or 4 or 5% of women who even worked over 50 hours a week, and most of those people working over 50 hours a week are men. So when you don't work as many hours, you know, it's not surprising that you don't make as much money. And I've even seen studies of male and female doctors where that's the case. And men are working an average of in the 40-something hours, and women are working 30-something hours. And then people are angry because women aren't making as much. But you know, when you even that out, and you'll find there's only about a 4%, maybe 3 or 4% discrepancy, which some people say is discrimination, and certainly could be, but it could also be other factors. For example, women don't negotiate, and there are many books and things like Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, or even the new book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, that talk about how women don't negotiate for themselves. So that could be part of the problem there of why women make somewhat less.
Right. I read a lot about this, and that women, they go for their first job and they just take what they're given instead of saying, well, how about moving expenses? How about another 10%? And that's what men do. And so the same way women need to be told to do this, there are a lot of things we need to tell men. Christina Haas Summers talked about some of this, about the need to reengage boys, to not make them read these sort of really horribly girly texts in school. And until we do that, I love the way you describe colleges, that they're becoming privileged finishing schools for girls, except that rather than learning manners, they teach women that men are the enemy. So until we change that, we don't have these, I mean, there are just so many courses like this. I took a women's studies course like this at University of Michigan, where I learned that all men are rapists, and I thought, I don't think my dad is a rapist.
I mean, can you imagine sitting in a class and being told that all men are rapists? And they even do this in some of the, like, you know, middle schools and places where boys are told that, you know, they're sexual perverts or something and they better not bother girls. And the thing is, a lot of this hits home, and a lot of it's not surprising that a lot of men internalize this message and just don't go around women at all, or feel like, oh, you know, they told me so many times I was a rapist, pervert, this, that, or the other. It's probably best just not to get too near women or not to bother too much with women. And I think a lot of, you know, I think it should be child abuse to be telling young boys that they're rapists or that they're potential rapists, any more than it would be okay to tell girls that, you know, they're potentially, you know, prostitutes or something. I just don't think, or actually, not that there's anything
Do people really, do they tell the young boys that they're rapists, or is it something sort of like that?
Is it something, I'm sorry?
That message is on college campus, or it was. I mean, I went to college in the early 80s, so.
Mm-hmm.
But at University
yeah.
of Michigan, I did take that class, and they said that all men are rapists. It was like Catherine McKinnon, Andrea Dworkin, horrible, horrible stuff. I thought, my dad sent me to college. You know, I mean, thanks, Dad. I don't think he's out raping women to get the money, you know?
Right, right. Well, the thing is, and I mentioned this in the book, is like one of the things is that people don't really realize what's happening. They think, oh, I'm sending Jimmy or, you know, Bobby to college, and, you know, it's just a nice place to go or he'll learn something. But they don't realize what's actually being taught in some of these courses and what a young man might be having to sit through and deal with. And in fact, in the book, I talk about Glenn Sachs, who was talking about the early 90s when he was at UCLA, and he said that, you know, the professors there would denigrate the boys. And, you know, it was like they'll denigrate an 18-year-old because they know those 18-year-olds are not going to fight back. You know, you're so worried about your grade or something that could happen to you, a young man is not really going to want to bring up, like, you know, he's not going to pick it, and he's not going to probably say a whole lot. And if he does, who knows what could happen? His grade could go down. He could get kicked out of the class. I mean, maybe not kicked out of the class, but, you know, it's always subjective. He could be getting, you know, poorer grades than he would otherwise.
Well, I think this quote from your book, Men on Strike, it really encapsulates this. This guy you talked to, because you interviewed many people for Men on Strike, and I'm talking with Dr. Helen Smith, forensic psychologist, who is author of Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. So this quote, this guy told you, men must lead a double life on campus, believe one thing, but act like they believe another. So to act like they buy into all of this, we're horrible people, we're perverts, we're rapists, we're stupid, and we abuse women at every turn. You know, that they have to, that's sort of what they're supposed to walk around like they believe in.
Right. You sort of do. You have to, as a guy, have to lead this double life. Now, for some men, this is their life. Some men truly feel this way. I'm a pathetic piece of, you know, crap, and I just go along with it. I mean, they don't really feel like that. They just say that because it's so easy for them, and they truly don't have a problem with it. But most men who are, you know, decent, honest men don't really buy this, and it's very difficult to be sitting in a class and to be told that, you know, that there's something wrong with you, or that you're liable to do something that you've never thought of in a million years. I mean, just because Susan Smith years ago drowned her children in a car does not mean that we should accuse all women of putting babies in, you know, that they're going to kill their children. We would never do that. Yet if some other man rapes a woman, we accuse all men of being rapists. And it makes no sense because most men are not rapists. Most men are good people, just like most women are decent people, and they're not looking out to harm anyone.
This actually brings me to a question from Greg, my producer and boyfriend. He said, do decent women get turned into unfeeling monsters, and if so, why, and can they be fixed?
I don't know. I think they turn into indecent monsters, but I think what women are is they tend to, this is a stereotype here, but they tend to be herd animals, and herd animals tend to do what the other people in the group do, and women tend to, they're very much into what other women think. As much as they want you to believe that they're doing everything for men, no, they're doing it for other women because women are very competitive within their group. And so when other women take on this sort of role as everything, I mean, just watch. For example, I was at our mall one day and there was some breast cancer thing, and there were hundreds of women milling around, like paying to go to this race or whatever. I mean, you hardly ever catch men doing that, you know, going for that type of event. Like, men aren't really as big a herd animals, maybe when it comes to, like, I don't know, watching ball games or something, but men tend to be a little more individualistic. So I think that what women do is I think that they feel that they have to kind of go along with this, and the media pounds it into them and the education. And think about it, they've never heard anything else, right? They don't. This message I'm giving to this book to me seems so clear and simple. I didn't know a book had to be written about it. But apparently nobody, you know, this is something that's foreign because when people hear it, they're like, I meet lots of people, especially men who are journalists, like these kind of old-timey journalist guys, and they don't have a clue. Like, you'll tell them about what's going on with men, and they're like, well, I've never heard of that. No, that doesn't happen. Or they'll just sort of deny that happened because maybe it didn't happen to them. So they think, well, I'm not divorced, or if I did get divorced, I've got plenty of money, and it all worked out. But they don't stop and think that, you know, just because it didn't happen to them, it could happen, it's happened to other people. But I think that going back to the question about women, I don't think that they turn into monsters. I think because they're herd animals, they go along with the crowd, and they've learned, it's so uncultured in our society to treat men poorly that they don't even know that it's poor. I talk to just regular women, and women have no problem thinking that what's a man's is, you know, if they want to marry a man, they think what the man has is theirs, and what they have is theirs. And they don't think of it any other way. A man's supposed to provide for me. There's no equality or anything. Times haven't changed. The man's still supposed to give me what we've got, and then that will be mine and my stuff. If I work or something, what's mine is mine. Now, more and more women are getting out and are having to be the breadwinners, and you are seeing that. I mean, more and more women are breadwinners. Unfortunately, when you look at some of the research, it does show that some of those marriages where the women are breadwinners tend to be, for some reason, more unhappy or to break up, and that's, you know, that's unfortunate. But, I mean, I do think women need to learn maybe how to be the breadwinner, how to be accepting of that, and not to feel that a man is less than because of that.
Well, I don't know if it's that easy to do because it is our evolved psychology, and it's like wanting, for example, a lot of women, most women seem to want a man who's taller than they are, and I think you like what you like. And so it is a little bit hard. But
you know, we've changed so many other things. We could say the same thing about anything. We could say the same thing about anything in culture that has changed. We've changed over millions of years. We've changed for the better in civil rights and, you know, in women's issues with so many things. And who's to say, I hear what you're saying, well, it's just ingrained in us, but so is beating the crap out of the person down the street. We've evolved beyond that. And
well,
I think that women need to.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that I think women need to go beyond that, too. I don't know, maybe I'm an aberration. I guess I'm just a weirdo, but I've never wanted a man taller than me. I've never felt that my husband, it happens to be taller than me, but I don't know. I like men who are short. I like men who are tall. I like men who are, if they're interesting, if they're broke, that's acceptable. I don't know. I mean, I think that... I like people who are, but I like men who are smart. I guess there's the issue. I mean, you know, right, what do you like and how hard is that to change? And I think about those things and yes, I think those things are hard to change, but then what do you propose?
Well, there are trade-offs, and I would say that, you know, as far as what you're saying, you don't care if a man is shorter, that the measurements and studies are as far as what most women like, mm-hmm. but there's cultural change and there's psychological change, And I think psychological change is her that women evolve to want a man who can bring home the bacon, care for children. Even if they don't have children, they want a man who's more successful. You know, and there are all these studies. It's so funny where you see the guy, you know, if he's in one car or the other, if he's in the Ferrari, they like him. The same guy in the, you know, Pinto, they don't want him probably because it'll explode. But the woman, whether she's in the Pinto or the Ferrari, the guys don't care if she's hot. So these are these things, you know, that you can try to talk yourself out of. But that's why this thing about women not going to college, men saying screw it to college, that's sort of, you know, not such a good thing for women, beyond it not being so great for men. And so, you know, I think that those things are we can try to talk ourselves out of, or say, you know, okay, he's ugly, but he has a private plane, that someone make that trade-off. They're more likely to make that trade-off than to date a really hot barista, where men would make the opposite trade-off. They date, you know, a girl who's hot, and not that there's anything wrong with being a barista, but that the woman wants the guy who has the vice president thing on his door and not the, you know, the coffee stickers.
Okay, but as more and more women become more and more successful, then the question becomes, then what do they do? And the thing is, if they are willing to treat their fellow human beings, that being men, as somehow beneath them, then maybe they'll get what they deserve. I mean, I hear what you're saying, it's just evolutionary. These women need X, Y, and Z, but what are these women bringing to the table? I mean, what is it?
Well, some of these women will just decide to trade off and say, okay, well, he would be a good dad, so I'll just bring home the bacon, you know, and so that becomes the sort of trade-off. But you know what, I'm noticing we only have a few more minutes left, and you have these great, great tips on fighting back, so I want to make sure we get to those. And your first of these tips on fighting back, and I should say who I'm talking to, I'm with forensic psychologist Dr. Helen Smith. Her book is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. You say we need to stop, men need to stop letting women run the agenda by controlling the dialogue on sex, gender, and relationships. And I love this advice you give to men. You say, if speaking up feels unnatural and is difficult, do it anyway. Remember that if people mock you, hate you, and call you names when you speak out, that just means your message is working. So that seems great.
Yeah, I think that's the main message I want men to get from the book, because this is a book for men. And my main message is that men do need to speak up, and they do need to let women stop controlling the agenda, because that's what everybody thinks, that gender issues are for women. And in fact, Jim McNamara wrote a terrific book on men in the media, and in it he found that most of the mass media that is written by women, and if it's written by men at all, it's written by pro-feminist men. So we need more just men who aren't afraid of being men to come out and say, you know, I'm going to write, or I'm going to speak up, I'm going to talk about these issues, and I'm not going to, like, just walk away. And a lot of men tell me, well, the manly thing is to walk away, but guess what? You know, you can say that you're walking away, but these issues are going to follow you wherever you go, and it doesn't help. I mean, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, you may not care for war, but war cares for you. And I think men need to step up and really focus on these issues and not allow women like those on The View and places to control how our society decides to, you know, the legal aspects of marriage or reproduction or all those important things that are important to almost everyone's life at some point.
This leads me to your tip number two, fight for better treatment of men in marriage and relationships. And you advise, don't be an emotional hostage. Start speaking up to your significant other about issues that concern you. Quit hiding, you know, in a basin with a beer, and swallowing your anger and hurt over something she said. And I think it's really important that you tell men that, because I think that's their tendency.
It really is. And men's tendency is they don't like conflict. They don't like the confrontation. And I think that's one of the things that we were talking before about what men, you know, what women need to work on. But these are things that men need to work on. Men need to work on dealing. You know what? Sometimes in a relationship you're going to have a confrontation and things aren't going to go, you know, as smoothly as you'd like, and you can't always walk away, and you don't have to be an ogre about anything. You just need to state, like, what it is that you want and what boundaries do you find acceptable, and not to just walk on eggshells around a woman and hide down in the basement and swallow your anger, because I think for a lot of men they do that, and that's why I think we do see some men act out aggressively, because men tend to swallow their anger and then they act out. They tend to be more what we call anger outward. They will display more aggressive or angry behaviors, when indeed if maybe they had been discussing what they were angry about all along, they wouldn't have gotten that angry. And I think a lot of men also feel like they're not going to get sex if they put their foot down or something, the woman's going to withdraw from them. But it doesn't sound like it's that great anyway. If you're just hiding in the basement and swallowing your anger, I can't imagine that your relationship is that great to begin with.
Right. Not a place for great sex. And you also very importantly advise men to fight for better laws, including those on paternity and forced fatherhood. And that sort of dovetails with something you say that it's advice for both men and women, but you give it for men in your book, Men on Strike, to set boundaries with your girlfriend or wife as early as possible. And I would say that goes for society, too, that men have to say no in society to all these things. And you say once bad behavior sets in, it is hard to change. And that seems to be sort of encapsulate what's happened, is that things have just slid downhill and men really haven't stood up for themselves. And your message in Men on Strike is that that has to change.
Yeah, it really is. That has to change. And what I would say is that you need to sort of think through some of these issues, because I think these are things that people sort of think about but they haven't put together. And I think one of the things that's important with my book is that the feedback I get from men is, oh, I've thought about these things, but I've never seen it all in one place. Like, I've never seen it sort of documented, and this is sort of how I feel, but it's hard to sort of realize that your complaints and your feeling that something isn't right is actually true and is actually extremely valid. And I think this book, I hope that it will validate men and how they feel and maybe some of the actions. I mean, the biggest compliment I've gotten so far, one of them is that men say, you know, it feels like I don't want to speak for men. The men in the book speak for themselves. And I think that's the important thing, is that so many men's voices honestly are not heard today, because men don't speak up, and then if they do speak up, people don't listen. But I hope this book will be a good way for society and for men to feel that somebody is listening, and to hopefully all of us can sort of reach a point where we can all realize that we're all human and that we all, you know, care for one another, and that it's best if our sons and our brothers and, you know, wives and women, you know, we do what's best for each other and help build a society that is full of happy and well-adjusted people.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful message and very important. And just to tell everyone who's been listening, I've been talking with forensic psychologist Dr. Helen Smith. Her book is Men on Strike, Why Men Are Boycotting Marriage, Fatherhood, and the American Dream, and Why It Matters. I hope a lot of people buy it, because I think it'll make some change if people do. So thank you so much. It's been a really interesting show.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I always love doing your show. It's really terrific, and I actually listen to it on a lot of Sundays. So thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Everything is better in twos. Two puppies, the two-step, double dutch, both eyebrows, or even better, two lines of unlimited.